Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
So the Bakersfield Condors, after a fantastic season, are out of the playoffs. Bruce, they were beaten by a deeper, more veteran San Diego Gulls team, 4-2. The Condors lost 6-2 tonight and was a stinker of a game. And the difference in the series, I think, was the experience of the experience of the Gulls, the number of injuries for the Condors. Yeah. They were missing four or five key players: Kelly Yamamoto, Cooper Marody, and as the series went out long, Ethan Bear and Luke Esposito. But the biggest difference, Bruce, it was really simple. This was a fairly even series in terms of grade A chances. Both teams had about the same number, but they just had way better goaltending at the San Diego end of the ice. Veteran Jeff Glass, I don't think he let in a grade B shot all series long. I don't think so. Whereas the Condors' two goalies, Shane Starrett and Stuart Skinner, let in about 6 or 7 grade B, grade C shots, including 3 tonight by Stuart Skinner. And that was the game, Bruce. I mean, you just can't have those kind of backbreakers in a game. And Skinner had played well the game before, but wow, he had a rough game tonight.
Whatever he was doing right last game. I mean, by your count tonight, San Diego actually had 0 grade A scoring chances on him and scored 3 times.
Yeah, and one of them was kind of an A-B chance. Like, maybe it was a chance, but it really was kind of outsider grade A scoring chance.
Yeah, it was on top of the circle. You should have a good look at it.
He should have had it. And then one of them was a grade C chance. That was the third goal that got him pulled from the game.
And I have trouble with these goalies that go, when the guy is like 2 feet from the goal line and they drop to one knee and they give him the top of the net. And I mean, it takes a perfect shot, but I don't know. It seems to me there should be a position you could take, like say standing up where there's nothing to shoot at, like nothing at all, but
go down and crouch down and say, shoot here. And every once in a while, buddy will shoot there. That's what happened there. It was a great shot. But,
That angle.
I like Skinner in net. And he made all the saves on the first shots last game. And if he had just done that this game, this game, who knows who would have wanted if the Condors got some goaltending. But, of course, goaltending is a big part of the game.
Sure,
so Bruce, there's not much else to say about the game, but let's talk about just we watched this series because we wanted to see which players are most likely to help out the Oilers going forward and who can shine at the AHL level. So let's talk about our top 5 prospects, top 5 players on Bakersfield who stood out in this series, both as players now and as prospects going forward. And we went over our list before we went on the air, and we actually came up with pretty much the same names. And so let's start. Let's start at the bottom of the list, and that's number 5, William Laugesen. What did you think of him, Bruce?
Well, I like him because he's a fun player to watch. You know, he's a little bit greasy. He's big. He's fairly mobile. He's a little bit unpredictable. So, you know, he's a cycle breaker type of player. But he's kind of a high-risk, high-reward guy. And they're going to have to iron out some of the risk part of his game before he makes it to the next level. But I like him as a prospect. And I think another year in the AHL, and he might be close.
Yeah, he's kind of that bottom-pairing, physical, somewhat mobile defenseman in the Igor Ulyanov, Don Jackson mold. Covering a lot of ground there, but I liked his game too. And he's tough, he's mobile, he can move the puck. His defensive reads aren't always great, but they count on him to kill the penalties. He's always out there as the top penalty killer, and he's got bad puck sense or anything like that, or he's not like he's a stupid player. He's not that at all. He's just he can get a little aggressive at times. That's way.
Yeah, well, he and you know what, he's got some offense in his game.
He sure does.
Like, he scored 27 points this year, 8 goals, all of them at even strength. So he was decently productive, and he thinks offensively, right? I mean, it wasn't just sort of accidental points. Like, he thinks aggressively, and that aggression includes taking the puck or moving the puck or making good wide cross-seam passes is one thing I really noticed out of him. He's got real breadth to his vision.
I really like that. He really pushes the play. He's always looking to push the play. And he can make a pass. So he's got a chance to play in the NHL. I agree with you. He's going to need at least half a season in the AHL, another half season in the AHL.
Project, and he always was.
Yeah, that's right. And he may not make it. He may make it. We'll see. Okay, number four on our list, Bruce Tyler Benson.
Mm-hmm.
He had a pretty bad game tonight, like they all did. They couldn't get it going tonight, man. And he really missed Cooper Marody in the playoffs and crime through the regular
season. And Curry, yeah. That
Curry, well, Curry was just, he was so quiet. He was, as you put it, in one game, invisible. Other than the one overtime goal, he was pretty much invisible this playoffs. He didn't have a great playoffs, but Benson did stand out now and then.
Mm-hmm.
He scored the overtime winner.
Mm-hmm. He set up the overtime winner.
To Curry, that's mm-hmm. right. And he scored the tying goal in the 7-6 game with 10 seconds left in overtime. He tied. Right. That's the goal he scored.
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of him?
I like his game quite a lot. And he's a subtle player, and he's really got the ability to sort of double back on himself and use little creases in the ice to his advantage. I mean, there was a play tonight, the game was long over. There was like 50 seconds left where he took the puck down the right wing side and there was nothing there. And he just kind of folded back on himself and bought himself an extra second or two. And then he fed a backhand pass to a defenseman cruising up the slot, 24, Kulovich, who had a real good chance on net. He had a tough game, but he had a real good chance on net there. And it was all created out of nothing by Benson. And it was just his ability to hold the puck while other guys are moving and then finding the guy that's moved into the best spot. And he's really got a knack for that. And the passing was there, I think, noticeable right away. But I'm starting to notice more and more him taking the puck into the good ice, as they like to call it. And then wreaking some havoc from there by just giving himself that extra second or split second to let his players move and let himself find the seam.
So he's obviously got some NHL skills, and everyone who talks about him remarks on his vision and his passing and his board work, and he works hard. If I was just to play the devil's advocate and say, okay, this guy isn't quite ready yet and might not be, might never, right. not, it's okay. There's a couple issues. He does have to get faster in his skating. I think he's just got to really push it. He's just got to get a little bit. He's just got to get a little bit quicker.
Talking about straight ahead speed, are you?
Yeah. Cause he can't break it on his own.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be that guy that breaks it on. Who is that guy? That's such a rare player, but I think he does mm-hmm. need to step it up just a little bit. And the second thing is, I think he needs to be a bit more physical if he's going to be in the NHL. You know, who's that young winger on the San Jose Sharks? Oh, Timo Meier.
Yeah.
Just a really smart, strong, tough towards player. Good with the puck, highly skilled. And, the thing I like about his game is he's got all that skill, but he's also super physical. He really hits people. And I think Benson has that you see it now and then where he's hitting and playing physical hockey. I think he's going to have to do it more to really make his mark in the NHL. He's got to just step up that aspect of his game as well.
Now, I'd argue Meier is more the sort of prototypical power forward, and I'm not sure you'd call Benson that, but it would be nice if he imposed himself a little bit more, you know.
Meyer's a bigger, obviously, a bigger player. I don't know if he's taller, but he's bigger. And, the reason I compare the two is because of their skill in small spaces.
Right.
Okay. They both have that like down low in the corners. They're shifty, able to make good passes. That's the, but you're right. I mean, Meyer is now an established, he's one of the, he's becoming one of the top wingers in the NHL, or at least on his team. His team's in the final four teams. So Timo Meyer's one heck of a player, has developed into one. Played a full year in the AHL, I believe. All right. Number three.
Half year.
What did he do?
33 games, 14 goals, 9 assists. And then he came up and played 34 games with the Sharks and didn't score at all. That was
as 19 a 20, when he came over?
20-year-old when he came up from the Q. And then the next year he got 21, and then the next year he got 30. So he's just ramping up.
Yeah. All right. Joe Gambardella. So I'll start in on this guy. That line of Russell, Malone, and Gambardella. I mean, Brad Malone was probably, he's not on our list, but he may have been the most effective forward for Bakersfield. But, you know, he is 29, and he's a long shot to have an impact in the NHL at this point. You never know. And Patrick Russell didn't have a strong series against the Gulls, I didn't think. And all told, especially in these last few big games. And I'm just wondering about the skill, speed package, if it's that's there. But with Gambardella, there's enough. The speed isn't great. The skill isn't great. But there's enough other intangibles in terms of his desire, work ethic, smarts with the puck, cleverness with the puck, determination to make a play, a willingness to take and make a hit, that I think he's going to be an NHLer, Bruce, next year. And I'm sure rooting for the guy because I really loved his game.
All of those things. I mean, he's fun to watch because he gives you what he's got, eh? And he really is relentless. It's the word I'd use to describe Joe Gambardella and his without the puck, but also with the puck. Man, try taking it off the guy when he's driving around, you know, low to the goal line, trying to take it to the net. Like he just. It's not like he's just tooling around on the outside going nowhere. He's going for the net front. When he doesn't have the puck, he's screening the goalie half the time. Like he's very good at that. And great on the forecheck. Like there's lots of things to like about his game. And most of it that translates very well to like a bottom six NHL player. Like you can't forecast him as a top six. Well, sometimes you have these guys who say, well, he's not going to make the top six. So he's going to be in the bottom six, except for he's not a bottom six style of player. Like, you know, here's my mandatory 80s sports reference, Raimo Suominen, right?
Cooper Marody, I think.
He's either going to be on the first or second line, because if he's on the fourth line, he's probably not going to be helping your team. Mm-hmm. He doesn't,
you know. Well, unless they went for a third, like, unless they really went for skill on a third line.
Well, I think Gambardella's got that, but he's got some of the other things, and he's also got the PK. And that's something the Oilers are so desperate for, David. There's a decent few forwards that can kill bloody penalties. They've had that problem with that unit for so long. And Gambardella showed some real chops on the PK to my eye.
So he's an interesting player, Bruce. I looked at his numbers, and every time he's gone to a league, I think like USHL, University Hockey AHL, for the first year, he's actually just a mediocre player on his team in terms of point scoring. He doesn't do a whole heck of a lot that first year. He takes a whole year to kind of adjust to that level. But by usually the second or the third year, he just comes on and starts putting up the points. And that's what happened this year in Bakersfield. He scored 29 goals, I believe, and just really started to put up those points. So good for Gambardella. And you know, we all saw him in Edmonton, and maybe he didn't make the biggest impression. I don't think he was particularly good, but he is someone who just seems to be able to figure it out at each level that he plays at. And he's 25 now. He's a slow developer, 24, 25.
26. And, no, 25, turning 26 is this Christmas.
All right. So he's 25 and it's slow developer, but, you know, I think he's going to get there. And I'm sure rooting for the guy, as I said.
Mm-hmm. Well, he played 50 games last year and 50 games this year. And he went from 13 goals to 6 assists and minus 1 to 29 goals, 19 assists, and plus 19.
Yeah. So,
you know, he just raised every category of his stat line by double or triple.
And he's done that at all, you know, two or three different levels of hockey in junior and in college, now in the pros. So
yeah, USHL and NC2A. In each case, he was way better in his second year than his first. Tripled his points.
Number two on our list, Bruce, and it's kind of like tied for number one, but Caleb Jones. What do you think of Caleb Jones?
Well, there's so much to like in the raw tools package in terms of his skating, which is really his calling card. It's just it's really his four-way skating. You know, he's good in every direction. He wins races to pucks, and he makes quick, easy plays with the puck most of the time. I still see some rough edges and the occasional galling blunder that's mixed into his game, but his you know, those few incidents aside, like he's a pretty reliable player back there, and he's pushing the puck in the right direction.
Yeah, he's 22. He can play right defense. He's played it all year, pretty much, and he can really skate and move the puck. He lacks a strong shot.
He needs to work on that.
He lacks, I would say, strong on-ice vision in terms of, but he really can move the puck well, and he defends pretty well. And there's a lot to like with Caleb Jones. He's the most likely to graduate next to the Edmonton Oilers. Evan Bouchard, Bruce, 8 points in 8 games in limited ice time. He got a goal and assist tonight. And
I like it.
God, I really loved his game tonight, and it's been increasingly reassuring to see him play in these AHL playoffs. I mean, I didn't see him play for the London Knights. All I heard was, you know, Craig Button leaving him off the list. I didn't watch the World Juniors either. And I hear he didn't play particularly well there. But so I was, you know, there was a couple like moments this winter with Evan Bouchard. Like, some people aren't liking him as much as his high draft status. But having him seen him both at the start of the year in Edmonton and now here again in Bakersfield, I was entirely reassured about the pedigree and quality of this hockey player and the strengths that he has. When he's got the puck and he's going forward, he doesn't look fast, but no one catches him.
Nobody ever catches him, do they?
Nobody ever catches him. He stick handles up the ice and he makes a great pass. And just his shot, I mean, it's like to die for as a hockey fan. It is such a fantastic tool for scoring goals. So Evan, they're going to have a hell of a time keeping him off the Oilers next year, Bruce.
As we saw tonight, the wrist shot. It's not just the slapper, but he's got a variety of shots. The one-timer, the full slapper, the wrist shot, sort of the snapshot from the slot. We've seen a variety of different releases from him, and they're all dangerous.
That's what he has over Justin Schultz. Those
pitchers that's got, you know, four different pitches, and he could strike you out with any of them.
Yes. Yeah. Good. Yeah, and that's what he has over Schultz. Like they're similar players in some ways, but I think Bouchard he looks bigger than Justin Schultz. Like they're the same kind of smooth, kind of maybe soft defenders. You know, that might be the criticism of both of them. But Bouchard seems a little bit rangier, like a longer reach. Mm-hmm. And they're both very strong passers of the puck. But Bouchard is a way better shooter than Justin Schultz ever was. And that is a huge quality. It's just hard not to get excited about thinking a player like that running the Oilers' power play. I mean, how are the Edmonton Oilers going to be able to resist having Evan Bouchard running their power play next year?
Well, not for long, what you would think in some ways, unless they got somebody who figures it out up in the NHL level. I mean, what we've seen the last few years is guys that are decidedly average at the task.
Nurse and Klefbom are just, they're so mechanical. Nurse,
Klefbom, Sekera.
Yeah,
you know, none of them really is a threat to score from the blue line. And, you know, I mean, they move the puck around, sure.
Tell me when he's out in the offensive zone, either the power play or even strength, all I'm thinking is one thing, like get it back to Bouchard, get it back to Bouchard, get it back to Bouchard, which is a pretty nice thought to have. And man, that is a, we have not had that. I haven't had that thought, you know, since Surrey was on the blue line, probably, I guess. I mean,
that's nice. And it's nice that he's a righty.
Yeah. Just
because the Oilers have those three lefties that can all move the puck off the right-hand boards and feed it across to the guy on this one time side.
It's I don't know how they're going to. So 8 points in eight AHL games.
Yeah, if he played 80 minutes, I'd be surprised. Like some of these games, he probably played 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
I don't understand all of it, but when he did play, he was mostly successful.
He had some rough defensive moments, including one tonight where he got caught in no man's land, deciding where to go, and that was passed out into the slot, and a goal was scored when he was out there. And so he does have, obviously, he's not a perfect defensive hockey player, and maybe they're going to need 20 or 30 games. You know, the wild card is the Swede Joel Pearson, who's 25 and coming over.
Yeah.
And is apparently just a fantastic offensive hockey player. So certainly in the Swedish league for 2 years running. And so maybe that means they have the luxury of keeping Bouchard. But to think of like a third pairing of Caleb Jones and Evan Bouchard. Now, it doesn't sound like Holland would go for that. He seems to like, the way he was talking, wants a veteran with a rookie in his pairings. But it's going to be, he's going to make a serious bid, Bouchard, to make the Oilers next. I mean, he almost made the team this year. So this should come as a surprise to no one. But again, I found to be an entirely reassuring performance from Evan Bouchard. So I hope Craig Button was watching. It'd be interesting to see if he was. I'm sure he wasn't, because he's watching, lots of other stuff to watch. But that he showed that he was deserving of, was it ninth or? Was it
10th overall? 10th overall.
10th overall pick.
Yeah.
I'm glad they made that pick at this point.
Deserving of our top prospect status last summer, and I think he's still there with a bullet, at least until we draft again at number 8 in June. That'll be the only serious contender with Bouchard for number 1 on our prospect list this year, I would think.
Yeah, and we'll have to see when they draft. Looks like they're going to be taking a forward, so.
I'm going to give you one dark horse in addition to our 5. And this is a guy who impressed me fairly frequently with little smart things and positives. And that is Ryan McLeod. And I saw lots of good things from that guy. And nothing flashy and spectacular, but just smart and positive. And he's big and fast and rangy.
And, yeah.
You know, I see him as a not a scorer, not really a driver of play, but a pusher of play in the right direction. And it's going to be a project too. Like, he's probably 2 years before he's in the NHL, I would imagine, but a very worthwhile prospect. And he showed lots of nice little signs there when he got put in there.
I liked him tonight quite a bit. I thought it was his best game tonight. He can play. And tonight made me think he'd probably be on the second line next year, leading the second line for Bakersfield. And hopefully he'll get that playing time and earn it and do something with it. But I agree with you. My dark horse is Evan Poli. He's not on an NHL contract yet. I think he soon will be. He's just a big, rough winger who's slowly getting better. He can make a play. He had all kinds of scoring chances throughout this series. Needs a rough, tough customer.
Take the puck to the net, eh?
Yeah, so he can.
It's not a speedster, but again, good luck getting it off. He's like a big fullback, running up the middle. It's going to take two or three guys to stop him, right? And he's an easy player to like, and I understand from Elliot Friedman's 31 Thoughts that there's a couple of NHL teams that are pursuing him, so. If the Oilers want to get him under contract, they're best to move before June 30th.
Indeed. And I think they will. And hopefully Evan Poli is grateful for the opportunity that he's gotten in the Oilers.
They gave him a shot. So he, some loyalty, two-way loyalty at this point. So, but with him only being on an AHL contract, essentially he's a free agent. So,
Bruce, you watched Andre Sekera today at the World Championships against Canada. How did he look?
Oh, man, he looked mighty disappointed when Canada scored the game winner with 1 second to go in regulation, skunking the Slovaks with 0 points from just a phenomenal hockey game. Man, was that fun to watch. Just two teams racing back and forth, tons of hitting, animosity, scrums. The crowd was like going totally nuts in Slovakia. And unfortunately, at the end of the game, they kind of did go nuts. And the ref, they didn't like a non-call that happened with 30 seconds left with Canada on the power play, in which they did score the winner. And unfortunately, there was booing and whistling through the national anthem, which is a real kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth. But those fans were just pumped and on fire for much of the game. As for Sekera himself, he was Sekera. He played almost 25 minutes. He's had the most ice time on the Slovak team in every game. And he did what we've come to expect, which is make little plays under pressure and make them look easy and retrieve the puck. And in a split second, read and find it, usually his partner on the open side, but no mistakes, no bobbles, make the play, get the puck moving north. And if he's got a second to get his eyes up, he'll make the pass out himself. But he really was sort of the linchpin player for them on the back end, on the first pairing and in every situation. And just look good. I mean, that kind of player you'd like on your team for sure. And it was kind of reassuring. Reassuring to see him playing at that level.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised to hear that. He played very well in a third pairing role. He's kind of the top pairing role against a tough Canadian team, and mm-hmm. sounds like he did well. So this is just more evidence, I would suggest, strong evidence that I wouldn't say it's crazy talk, I think, to talk about buying out Milan Lucic. You know, mm-hmm. Elliot Friedman's talked about this this notion that there's talk, some, I don't know where it's coming from, just to shake things up, they would buy out Milan Lucic, like give your head a shake is what I would say. Like that just strikes me as kind of like, where's that coming from? Like, who says that? Who believes that Milan Lucic is buying him out as a good idea? And so that's crazy.
Economically, strategically, it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's just the terms of his contract are just too onerous to make it reasonable.
It's not crazy talk to look more seriously to Sekera about, but I do think it's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. And we've already talked about why I think that. But I just think this is more evidence that the Oilers need top four to D-men. Mm-hmm. He's as good as Benning. He's as good a bet as anyone they're going to get for the amount of money they'd have after a buyout. Like whatever they have left over from that.
Yeah.
Good luck making as good a bet with the remaining money that you have on a top four D-man as you will make with Andre Sekera. So I don't see it. I just think again, it's not quite crazy talk like the Lucic thing is.
But I don't see a buyout. I do see a trade for a pricey player at another position, just because they have so many left defensemen, and that is a lot of money for a third pairing guy.
Yeah, so great if he's increasing his value. Like, you can trade anybody, right? Like,
absolutely.
And I'm not against that.
And one of the guys ahead of him, Darnell Nurse, had a hell of a game for Canada today. He played an absolute ton. 25 minutes and 35 seconds, by far the most on Team Canada. And when their bench got shortened due to two injuries on defense, Darnell really was pushed into extra service, and he delivered the goods.
Music to my ears. Let's leave it there, Bruce.
Yeah, well, I'm going to leave it here. I'm going to hand it to you, David, for telling me privately before the series started that San Diego was probably going to win it in six.
I just looked at the roster and all those.
I know you did. NHL you explained players. Your reasons, and basically that's what happened, give or take the goaltending, which I don't think any of us saw being that big of a difference.
I thought Shane Sterrett was going to be much better than that. All right, thanks again, Bruce. Thanks for talking.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.